The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. Today, your pharmacist and you, Nick Kay, is here. Do you remember Nick was on earlier in the summer? So if there's anything you'd like some advice on, remember, no personal clinical advice, but we aim to clarify what we're talking about. So if you want to talk to Nick Kay, by all means, call 66 13 68. Text 166 177. WhatsApp 106 177 or email studio at manxradio.com. You and your pharmacist with Nick Kay today. Pastor Mike, good afternoon, Nick.
Good afternoon, Andy. Thank you very much for having me back on.
Not at all. You're looking very well. You're looking very well indeed. I want to go to something straight off the bat because I know, obviously, many pharmacists cover this and obviously Kingsley Mooty do as well. Yeah. What's happened to the price of weight, Japs?
Yeah, no, a great question. So you did say I was looking very well and I don't mind sharing. Some of that is because I'm also looked after by our clinical team and have lost 4 stone since the beginning of the year on the weight jabs. But we had an excitement over the last couple of weeks in that on the 14th of August at 11 o'clock, pharmacies were told that the price of Mounjaro was going to change. At 12 o'clock, it was on the media outlets. So loads of time for us all to react. No panic at all going on, Andy, as you can well imagine. What then happened was lots of stock was tried to be ordered and Lilly, the company that owned it, basically said no extra orders. Everyone can only have what they had last month. Loads of pharmacy teams across the island have worked really hard to maintain stock. We've managed to maintain stock as have other providers. And what's basically happened, there's been a direction from America which says Europe pays too little for their for the Mounjaro injections, and therefore a price increase has come across to us. So we had a couple of issues, Andy, really. Not only is the price, which has been a challenge for us to sort of manage and monitor, but also maintaining supply for people that need the medicine. And that's been really difficult. I'm really proud with the way the teams have worked to sort of maintain that supply. But it's been hard. As a patient myself, I understand how hard that is.
It's virtually doubled, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone provides lots of different pricing. But to use us as an example, other providers are out there. We before the beginning of this week, the top strength, we were sort of selling at $199. We were told we were going to buy that for $330. So you can see the price with which that jump is coming. Is huge. And actually, if somebody's been on treatment for a while, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months, whatever it may be, that sudden jump in cost, which was hit us all, the industry and patients, all within an hour or two, was really difficult to react to.
Okay, new readers start here. Obviously, weight loss jabs have been around for a while, but they were used for diabetic, weren't they? Diabetic conditions.
Yeah, absolutely right. So quite an interesting history. I find it quite exciting. But then again, I am a pharmacist and a bit of a nerd. You would expect, and you'd hope I would find it exciting. Originally designed for how people control blood sugar. So they were looking at things like snakes and Komodo dragons and going, why do they eat infrequently and how do they control their blood sugar? Found out the way in which they controlled their blood sugar. But then actually what happened with it was people were losing weight. The problem for the pharmaceutical industry was when they were losing weight, then their type 2 diabetes reversed and they came off the medicine. And as we found out from the previous comments, pharma's not altruistic. They like to make a few pennies. So some genius in Novo Nordisk thought, okay, how are we going to market this side effect as the primary cause? Found out they did a couple more things, make you think about food less often. Phrase you hear on social media, although I don't do a lot of social media, is food noise. So kind of reduce those types of things and slows down the way in which things move through the tummy, so they make you feel fuller quicker. And from there, then they moved into being, this revolutionary new medicine. Very few medicines cross into the national and social conscience. You probably won't hear about medications for asthma or whatever it may be, but most people would understand what the term weight loss jabs or skinny jabs would mean.
Okay. Is this safe, Nick? We're not going to find out in 10 years' time that it was dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, with Andy, with all data comes as data comes through, you know, I mean, what we would say is that there are serious side effects and there are more manageable side effects. And you have to really check with your prescriber or your clinician whether or not these things are safe or appropriate for you. I say frequently in my consultations, my only job is to keep people safe within that period. The one thing that we do warn everyone around is the risk of acute pancreatitis, which is a severe condition but is quite rare, and we have to explain and people know what those symptoms are. Again, I'll use myself as a personal example. You know, having been prescribing these things both here and across for 5-6 years, I finally took the plunge in February, having looked at what all the data, everything that was available, and you've got to believe it yourself if you're using it, right?
Okay. Well, the key, as you mentioned there, is to get advice. And remember, we're not telling anybody what to do.
Exactly.
What we're saying is go to your preferred professional.
Yes.
And talk this through with them. Talk it through for hours if you want.
And absolutely. And without any pressure, you know, I am, maybe I'm a bit old school and a bit of dinosaur, but that face-to-face or that personal connection with a clinician, I think, is really, really important. You know, you can have that safe environment to ask any questions that you would need to ask. Pause if you need to, think if you need to, you know, the advice is the most important part as we start these journeys.
When you come off them, does the weight slab back on?
Yeah, no, that's a really fair and great question, Andy. So everybody's journey is different. And we have to, you know, when we've looked at this sort of stuff from a clinical point of view, there's lots of clinical inputs you start monitoring in between. And then as people come off the medicines, that is something that people are requiring more help and advice with. There's loads of different studies and data out there. Some of the internal NHS England data I've seen suggests that potentially at 12 months after stopping, 72 to 84% of people aren't back on it again after a year. And I think that sort of says to you that if you do these things in the right way, and that you use it as an aid to help you change some of your behaviours and relationships with food, then that can be really helpful. But some people will go back on it, but not as many as you think at the minute.
Okay. Here's a note in from Christine who said, Andy, can pharmacists write prescriptions?
So it depends, actually. So I am an independent prescriber, which means that I've done an additional year's training so that I can write any prescription that a general practitioner can, as long as it's within my clinical competency. Actually, from 2026, all newly graduated pharmacists will come out as independent prescribers as well. So again, through private services, you know, I have yesterday prescribed antibiotics, acne cream, various of different conditions. So it depends on the pharmacist, double check, but some of us absolutely can.
Okay, there are community pharmacists right around the Isle of Man. Obviously, Nick's one of the ones in Ballasalla, Castletown, Douglas, Kirkmichael, Laxey, Onken, Peel, Port Erin, Port St Mary and Ramsey. We talked last time about the dynamic that's changing, really, between primary care, between GPs and the responsibility that pharmacists are now assuming. Did they want this responsibility? It's not been just pushed on them, has it?
No, Andy, I think that's a really, really great question. You know, I've now been practicing on the Isle of Man, you know, for well over a year, and I absolutely love the island and the way it could develop. I think there's such a unique opportunity on the Isle of Man to change the way in which primary care is done. To your point, if you look across, they're creating things which are called integrated neighbourhood teams, where based around the general practice, you know, they have to look at all the assets there for what assets they've got to deliver great care. So why would we not have, building on the fact that, you know, community pharmacy already do flu vaccinations, you know, why would we not be doing whooping cough vaccines, which are coming out? Why not chickenpox vaccines? You know, all of these things can be delivered in community pharmacies. I think it would be fair to say that community pharmacies are clinically able to deliver these great services. I think it would also be fair to say that these things come if they're being commissioned with a return on investment calculation for every individual pharmacy business. And I think that's right to say out loud. But when accessing healthcare becomes sometimes more challenging, I think the island can and will be brave in the way in which it delivers that sort of care. Some really simple ones as well, you know, blood pressure monitoring. You know, there's a scheme across where you can get blood pressure done. There's a Know Your Numbers campaign coming out with public health on the island in the next couple of weeks. Wouldn't it be great to be able to link that into a pharmacy service which monitors the blood pressure? You can use then, if you need to and it's high, an ABPM or an average 24-hour blood pressure monitor. All these schemes exist in other parts of in the UK. Import some of those services, you know, monitor some people, save some lives. You know, I am a 49-year-old, well, moderately overweight male now, but I was a 49-year-old, severely overweight male with five children. I probably don't engage with healthcare in the right way, but I will come into a pharmacy. I will pick up other stuff. I will ask for other things. I'm the perfect demographic for to catch and prevent future events.
What's the situation with whooping cough vaccine here?
Yeah, so whooping cough vaccine here, as I understand it, is, you know, I think check with your clinicians and GPs. I know that we've been administering whooping cough vaccine privately over the last couple of days. So, you know, they will be available. Check with your service provider. Check if you're eligible or not. I know back across they're looking at new service rollout within February. So I would assume that the island will be looking at something similar.
Okay. Let's get back to blood pressure, because blood pressure can be at the bottom of all sorts of situations.
Completely.
And it's one of those things that is simple when you know what to do, but many people shy away from it.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, people generally don't like to find out that they've got health issues, but actually with blood pressure, it's something that's easily treated, easily managed. Most of the medication, nothing side effect free, but most things don't cause massive issues. And again, if anyone's seen a loved one or heard of anyone suffering with stroke or heart attack, you know, to take a tablet once a day and prevent those types of things is hugely, hugely important. So, you know, the other thing as well, I heard a consultant cardiologist talk about blood pressure as a silent killer. You know, most people don't know that they've got it. Therefore, that routine screen monitoring, which could be implemented across all pharmacies, would be what a great place to do and capture that.
It's fair to say that, I mean, certainly over the past 50 years, many more people are living a lot longer. Not as many people smoke, as
yes.
many as they used to do. Not a lot of people die of, well, certainly things like strokes and heart attacks. The care in those has come on phenomenally. The treatment of heart disease, repairing hearts itself, has come on. So it seems like there's been some sort of medical revolution over the past 50 years in this. And is this likely to gather pace?
Yeah, no, it is, Andy. And I think you've highlighted something that's really important. Those treatments are out there now, right? If you're on the treatments, then those types of things can be life-changing and life-saving. But it's knowing if you should be on that treatment, you know, how do you know you've got that high blood pressure? You know, if you can't access those advances in treatment and those advances in care, if you don't know that there's an issue there to start with, by the time you get to that point of stroke or heart attack, although, like you say, the data's much better, the treatments are much better, better not to get there, in my view.
Okay, let's get to the phones now, and Howard's first with us. Howard, hi, you're live with Nick the pharmacist.
Nick the pharmacist, that's a new one.
Yeah.
Good afternoon to you both. Anyway, as Andy will know, I'm old enough to remember quite a distance back. And I can remember in Douglas, where we were living, the pharmacist was part of the community.
Yes.
Very much so, because at the time, and I can remember this, my grandmother having to pay the doctor to come out to the house. So to go down to a pharmacist and get good information and even the product that a doctor would have prescribed, this was a community-based help, and the pharmacist was very much part of the family in a sense. Now, could you ever envisage something like that? I'm not talking about having to pay for doctors coming out. Pharmacy, they keep talking about this, and I've got a good, the pharmacist that we go to is excellent. I won't mention any names because, you know, but having said that, you can go to them for advice. And I would rather do this than wait 3 to 4 weeks to go and see a GP.
What an interesting point.
Yeah, no, Howard, I think you're absolutely right. And everything that we've been talking about builds about that. The clue's in the title, right? Community pharmacy. It absolutely is part of its community. And when you say, you know, you've got those lifelong relationships with great community pharmacists, and they do give you that advice, you know, and what we're really good at is giving advice and being able to safety net you and go, okay, you know, this is our advice. But if we don't know, know, we don't know, and we can transfer you on. But, you know, that access to high quality healthcare without an appointment is something that we should value, cherish and invest in, I think. And I completely agree. And, you know, we've already got on the island the ways in which we can treat some minor ailments, as you say, giving out the sort of treatments that a doctor could. You know, and we believe that the import of something like Pharmacy First, which is going to be more around that consultation, will be coming to the island soon. So I think these types of things show the direction of which primary care should be going in. Primary care should use all of its assets. GPs are amazing clinicians, loads of different things. But if there's stuff that they don't need to do, then we should use all of the assets available to us, including community pharmacies. Like you say, that relationship and that trust that you build up with someone that you can see regularly and often is key.
That's interesting, Howard. So you feel very comfortable and welcomed almost going to your pharmacist?
I do. Well, to say the chap that we go to, and, well, it's a, it's a family-run business and an excellent business and excellent advice. And I wouldn't hesitate to go to him regarding various other aspects. My wife goes there to get her injections for the flu jab and all this and the other. And they will advise. And I can remember where the Strand Shopping Centre is now in Douglas. There used to be a chemist shop there, Purcell's, and just down where the little Chinese takeaway is in Granville Street, that was another chemist shop. Guild, I think it was. I can't remember anyway. But those you could go to for advice and have virtually equal advice, because the pharmacists are fully conversant with the medicines because they're handling them on a daily basis. And they would have their own brands. There was one, I never forget it, it was a cough medicine called Tamarind. And that was in Purcell's, and that was made up on site by the pharmacist. And I looked up tamarind, and tamarind is actually, well, it's a herb. So he took the name for that for his own medicine. And we, all round that area, and I'm talking all round where the Chester Street car park is now, and all round that area, Finch Road, we all use those. And they were excellent. And this is what I would like to see now with the pharmacy. Because if you go to a pharmacist, that pharmacist there has a career. And he will stay with that shop. And if it's his own shop, he will build it up. But if you go to a clinic, you don't know which doctor you're going to see.
Okay.
And each time you go to the pharmacist, that repartee is built up, and he will know virtually more or less what your illnesses are and what follows through.
Okay, Howard, thanks for calling today.
Take care.
Good to hear
Bye
from
now.
You. What an interesting point, Nick, and the fact they mentioned about it's a career, it's a business, and obviously that pharmacist will take care of the customers.
Absolutely right. You know, I thought it was really fascinating listening to Howard. You know, I'm a third generation pharmacist. You know, I have been involved in family businesses in Cornwall before coming across here, and I would absolutely echo that longer term relationship. And what also made me laugh was I used to make up a cough mixture because I qualified in 1998, so old enough to remember when we made up cough mixtures, and people used to come in and ask for two bottles of grandfather's mix. So I absolutely get that personalised care. And actually, if you look even at strategic plans for large organisations like Manx Care and NHS England, that continuity of care from a professional is something that, whether that be a GP or a pharmacist, they recognise is becoming more and more and more important.
Okay. Is there a shortage of pharmacists?
Is there a shortage of pharmacists? I think there's a national shortage of pharmacists on the Isle of Man. I think that is right and fair to say. I think they're a precious resource that are used well currently. But I think we should be able to, on the Isle of Man, create a environment with which people absolutely see this as a place they want to practice. Over the last sort of 12, 14 months, what I've seen in an island is something that you could make world leading. Rather than being 2-3 years behind, you could be absolutely 5-10 years ahead. And why not? We should be brave. We should be pushing that. People should want to come here and practice pharmacy.
Okay, well, you're past chairman of the National Pharmacy Association in the UK. UK. What's the situation there? Are they short of pharmacists?
Yeah, so yeah, absolute privilege to be the immediate past chair, still on the board of directors until 27. And actually, for my sins, I've actually been asked to be a director of the World Pharmacy Council, believe it or not, which is very exciting. But it is a international problem. But I think, you know, community pharmacists or pharmacists in general, whether whichever setting they work in, whether that be hospital, GP practice or community, are seen as a resource which can be used more and more and more. One of the challenges I always found as being the chair of the National Pharmacy Association, especially with the England contract, was sort of saying, actually, community pharmacy is really financially challenged, yet also at the same time saying what a great career it is. I mean, I love being a pharmacist. I'm proud to be a pharmacist. I'm proud to make a difference to the people that we serve. And it's getting that balance right, Andy, to say, yes, it is financially challenged. Yes, there are some issues with funding back in England, especially. But it is a great career to practice. Why not?
Okay. And Joan's with us now. Hi, Joan. You're live with Nick the Pharmacist.
Nick the Pharmacist. How are you, Nick?
Yeah, I'm good. I've been called the dealer, the pharmacist. I'll take the pharmacist today. That's fine.
Hi, Andy. Yeah, just a couple of things. You mentioned there before, obviously, Big Pharma is a very big business and a lot of money involved in it. And as always, we follow the money trail. And I just am concerned about shortcuts with a few things. I mean, we looked at this with the COVID-19 shots. And, of course, now the nursing staff here are having meetings and correlating a large increase in vertigo, which the only thing they can correlate it to is them jabs. So going back onto the skinny jab, if you will, and primarily the Ozempic one, just looking at some of the reports that's coming through from, where are we now? Let's just have a look. It's the university, a study in, by Benzin, Julian Benzin, on thyroid cancer risk, which seems to be the big problem with this drug. There's not been some proper testing done with people who are non-diabetic with this drug in long-term studies. So the main worrying ingredient seems to be, let me just get this right, semaglutide, I think we pronounce it. And just looking at that seems to be the main issue. It's a French study from the University of Bordeaux, 58% increase in all thyroid cancer, 78% increase.
Oh, well, let's let Nick respond to that. Nick?
Yeah, no, I think it's really fair. You know, I think it's a really fair point that, you know, this is why that personal contact with a clinician is really important. So part of our pre-screening that we do, and I'm sure other providers do, is we ask if there's a any history of thyroid cancer or if there's a first-person blood relative with thyroid cancer. Because as you say, those studies are new, they are out there, the comparison data is still being drawn and worked up. I think also having seen some data produced by a company called IQVIA, which sort of shows the size of the UK private market, over 1.8 million people a month are taking this type of medicine. You know, there's something about making sure and what that would look like and the presentations of those thyroid cancers as the exposure to the medicine grows. I think you're absolutely right to be highlighting it. We highlight it with our consultations for people on appropriate starts, and just make sure that people are comfortable. Right, you have to lay out all the risks that are there, both with those types of things, simple side effects, the serious side effects, but rare of acute pancreatitis included, and then let people make the decisions on the best data they have available.
Yeah, and I mean, it's very similar ingredients to the Mejano, but not quite the same formulation.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is it's kind of basically a trial, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a bit more than a trial. I think, you know, post-marketing data, you know, with any medicine, you monitor it. There's things called black triangle, as I'm sure you're aware, where, you know, things that are new to market. You only used to be able to report side effects in via the MRHA still, even on the Isle of Man, to the relevant market authority holders. Used to be only pharmacists, actually, that could record that black triangle data, but now, you know, any other clinician can do it, members of the public can report in, so that data set is getting wider and more diverse all the time. And as with anything, and you learn stuff, then there has to be a how much sort of trial and stuff would you give before you release something to the market, how much post sort of release data do you actually get, and I think it's right to keep monitoring it and advising it, and, you know, we'll give the best advice as the advice comes through.
June?
Yeah, and again, it, you know, back to shortcutting on trials, etc. And we look back at and I've said this before about modern day vaccinations compared to original vaccinations and the introduction of mRNA many years ago, and the link down the autism trail 2 years after they were instigated. So there's a lot of stuff there which is now coming out in America on studies of this stuff which has not been brought out before. So it just concerns me that sometimes they bring stuff out and they've not done full proper trials on a lot of the stuff. So like you say, Nick, I mean, it's just being aware of what you're taking and make your own decisions. But definitely the shortcutting concerns me a bit on some of the stuff.
Okay, June, but I know you live part of the year in Florida, and not being too much of a stereotype, but I mean, there are some fairly large people in America. Are there skinny jabs going in America?
I'll tell you when I get out there, Andy.
Oh.
I would imagine that no America, they'll have any jab than any pill that's going.
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks for calling, Joe. Good to hear from you.
So, Andy, can I just also just comment on the vaccine point? I think it's I think it's important. So I think it's right to be aware of what you're taking. But, you know, having seen some stuff, again, back across of children dying with whooping cough and, you know, measles, they're horrible, right? As a dad of five, that's not something I want my kids to go through. So I think it's right to sort of bear those things in mind and keep them balanced.
That's the important thing is that once upon a time, and obviously with COVID, there was a whole raft of people talking about the efficacy and sometimes the morals of vaccinations. However, up until then, people ran towards them.
Exactly.
People ran towards anybody who went to the Far East had to have jabs, as you say, MMR for children, whooping cough and what have you. I mean, do you think COVID did jabs a bad turn?
Yeah, I mean, there's a thing which we called, isn't it? People describe it as vaccine fatigue, you know, where people just, you know, not another jab, not another jab. I mean, I was fortunate enough to co-chair a lecture at the Royal Society, which was really interesting, which was talking about some sort of vaccines that are coming. So everyone will have heard about antimicrobial resistance and the fact that antibiotics don't work. So actually, if you can create a vaccine against some of those really problematic bacterial infections, I mean, people will understand about pneumonia jabs, then actually if you don't need the antibiotics to treat it because your own immune system zapped it because you've had a vaccine, then actually antibiotic resistance becomes less of a problem. So as the caller said before, you know, it's really important to be aware of what's going in your body. It's really important to take the right advice from clinicians that you trust, to Howard's point back at the first caller in, but actually be really balanced in that view. Some vaccines, obviously, in my professional and personal opinion, are life-saving and important.
Okay. Nick, the pharmacist, is with us today from Kingsley Mooty. And that you mentioned antibiotics. It brought me on to Colin, who dropped a note in just to say, is it true that antibiotics are at the limit of what they can do, that the super bugs are beating antibiotics?
Yeah, I mean, there are absolutely bugs that are resistant to lots of strains of antibiotics leading into, and that's where some of the people were leading into those vaccine conversations having previously in London at the end of last year. And, you know, we all need to be aware of antibiotics. We all need to be aware of overuse of antibiotics. In the last couple of weeks, there's been the first new class of antibiotics launched for urine infections. So, you know, I think, you know, dare we talk about AI? I'm not sure we should talk about AI because that's a whole conversation in itself. I'm certainly no expert. But, you know, you can see the way in which technology is being used to apply a different way of designing medicines, which I think gives me some hope for the future that new classes of antibiotics will be on the way. But treating antibiotics with respect and using them when we need them, but getting other advice on ways to manage it is really important, Andy.
Okay, plenty of short questions now. Terry on 469 says, can a pharmacist issue male internal catheters, or does he need a GP prescription?
So I think that's really important. So a catheter from a legal point of view is classed as a device, so you could in theory supply one, but given the nice French bloke Charrier designed them with a scale and a thing, you know, they'll see them from numbers from 8 to, you know, in their 20s, all to do with widths and size and all that kind of stuff. I certainly would always say, you know, if somebody knew what they wanted and they had been previously diagnosed by a specialist that that was what they required, and maybe they'd run out or something like that, I would be personally comfortable to supply that. But would I diagnose and give a catheter immediately without any other advice? Probably not.
Okay, this is 535. How often is the weight loss jab administered?
So different weight loss jabs. So the most common ones you'll hear about, well, there's three names you'll hear about, Ozempic, Wegovy, and Monjuvi. Mounjaro. Ozempic and Wegovy are actually the same medicine, but Ozempic used for diabetes in the UK. So that leaves us with Wegovy and Mounjaro. And both of those are administered weekly. There was one before that called Saxenda, and that was administered daily, but that's kind of fallen by the wayside. It's not quite as effective. And why would you want to jab yourself every day when you could do it once a week?
Talking about annual checkups, if you like, mm-hmm. does a pharmacist play any part in this? Can a pharmacist do a kind of, pardon the term, but do an MOT for somebody?
Yeah, so I think different pharmacies are doing things in different ways. So I know that we're not unique on the island, but you know, we now have nursing staff that deliver blood tests, for example. So you know, there's a way in which you can have generalised sort of checkups. You know, coming in, having blood tests, having weight, blood pressure checked isn't something that would challenge most pharmacies, I wouldn't think. Bloods might be a little bit unusual, but I know lots of different clinicians and different providers do that type of stuff. I think, though, what is important is making sure that information sort of fed back to your general practitioner. Your GP will want to know what's going on, and you know, make sure that entire medical record is kept in one place, Andy. So pharmacists can certainly give you advice. Blood pressure, I think weight, height would be not a problem. Then just check with your individual pharmacist for some of the other things they could offer for you.
Okay. Howard, a different Howard, says, and this is just going back, and it's a wider question, but it's a kind of humorous thing about the fact that they're taking locally produced Manx ice cream off the menu for children. Yeah. Blood pressure, blood sugar, obesity and diet are all good to hear discussed, says Howard.
Yes.
Would Nick be happy for his children to be fed ice cream locally produced or otherwise at primary school?
Yeah, well, you know, as a dad of five, both being Celtic and in Cornwall and having clotted cream and on the Isle of Man and having ice cream, I think, you know, a balance is fair, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned clotted cream. Yeah. I mean, is clotted cream still on the menu in the Southwest?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything in balance, isn't it? You know, I think, you know, as a dad, as a personal opinion, you want your kids to be fed good food, good quality food, don't you? But, you know, I think everything in balance is fair, not too much of anything.
Okay, we remember Kay's the Chemist in Chester Road, Newquay, years ago. They were very helpful and very welcoming, say, Kim and John in Laxey.
Well, that's brilliant, because that was my dad's and my pharmacy and my granddad's pharmacy.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah, indeed.
Well,
so
that's the,
so that is me. There you go.
There's little Nicholas with us on Max Radio.
It is. It's been a long time since I've been called little Nicholas or Nicky, but, you know, that's the joy of being growing up in the 80s and starting stacking shelves in your father's shop when you're 12.
Okay, you mentioned AI. This isn't AI specifically. However, you hear a lot about pharmacy robots for dispensing and stock management, the use of pharmacy robots.
Yeah.
I'll ask you this, because I know for a fact you've got a very expensive robot in Balthane, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. So, you know, lots of things around the pharmacy and the way in which it operates. People talk a lot about automation. And we as an organisation and our directors decided that automation was something that we wanted to embrace from the outset. What we feel is that that then gives our teams time to do other things. So, you know, from a pharmacist point of view, from a superintendent point of view, I would rather have my teams, you know, giving care, dispensing medicines that are waiting, you know, maybe getting involved with blood pressure checks, ear syringing, whatever it may be, and some of that, you know, putting stock away, you know, picking stock. We find automation works really well. You know, anybody would be welcome to come down and see the robot. It's amazing. And actually, it's...
I mean, I'm sure you won't say this, but I will. It's well into seven figures, isn't it, that robot?
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, we had somebody that came out and went, goodness, you've overspec'd it. It's bigger than the one in the Chelsea and Westminster. So, you know, I mean, it is an amazing piece of kit. You know, it was handmade in Belgium. It was bought across. It was assembled on site. It has a spare head to get replaced if we need it. It's got four channels and chutes that will throw medicines out really, really quickly. And accurately. So going to electronic prescribing, which we're hoping will be coming to the island soon, you know, when a GP or a clinician in a GP practice actually sends an electronic prescription, that will then go through and drop straight in effect into the robot. So exactly what was asked for will be picked. Now, you still need some clinical intervention from the pharmacist on site, but from an accuracy point of view, that should really increase and make errors much, much, much less likely. So it's an amazing bit of kit.
Steve on 806 said, vaccines are under real threat from huge amounts of misinformation mm-hmm. spread by media and unqualified individuals scouring the internet. Mm. What's Nick's view on countering misinformation as far as a vaccine? He also said linking vaccines to autism is widely debunked as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's something I think that Howard, our first caller, said, isn't it? It's about trust and relationship. And pharmacists have really been shown actually as that continuity of care, especially in groups of people who are really, really vaccine hesitant, of giving information that is felt to be trusted and true. And I think that that's really, really important. From a very, very personal point of view, I think vaccines are absolutely critical, save lots of lives. I would absolutely agree with your point, Andy, that maybe COVID gave people vaccine fatigue. But watching a child die of measles or whooping cough is horrific. No one wants to go through that. So I think the way in which we put the counter argument or the positive argument for vaccines across is that, you know, mass administration, they do save lives, and they're making things better, in my view.
Well, I mean, certainly when what was the first bit? Polio, of course, yeah. Will be the first one in the 1950s, yeah. And the epidemic of polio, exactly. And those machines that people used, yeah, to have to breathe inside,
exactly. iron lungs,
and yeah, what have you. So they were vaccines were almost a miracle cure.
Indeed, smallpox eradication. You know, I mean, there are things that you forget about along that journey. And we forget about them because the vaccines have been actually so successful that they're not in the front of our radar, because we're not seeing that human consequence of them because they've been working, in my view. So it's only when we get people disengaging in those programs and those things come back that we think, oh gosh, where were we? Why did we get to this point?
You mentioned Pharmacy First. What's that?
Yeah, so Pharmacy First is a scheme that runs in some of the other nations, in England, Scotland, Wales, in various forms. It builds on sort of our pharmacy, Think Pharmacy scheme we have in the Isle of Man. And what that basically means is that you'll be able to have a consultation with a pharmacist. The pharmacist will then be able to decide whether or not you need some things, for example, back across things, antibiotics for throat infection, other things like that, basic ear infections, and then supply you those prescription treatments if they're appropriate. But importantly, then a note gets fed back to the general practitioner as well, so that note is complete. So Pharmacy First is seen as a way of helping manage that primary care workload, letting GP colleagues deal with what they need to, but not doing the things they don't need to. And if you listen to some of the senior people in the Department of Health in the UK, what they say is the reason they didn't call it minor ailment consultations or simple problems or whatever it is, because they believe that Pharmacy First should mean over time it becomes the first place for contraception advice. It becomes the first place for minor ailments advice. It becomes the first place for things like blood pressure monitoring. So the term Pharmacy First was deliberately chosen rather than things like minor ailment scheme, because it shows the direction of travel, especially across the UK, which I think the Isle of Man could and should embrace.
A note in this is from Shirley, and Shirley just says, bearing in mind what Howard was talking about, the relationship with pharmacists in the past, isn't there also the onus on the patient to look after their own health? I mean, this kind of idea that somebody's going to do it for you. Yeah. How do you tell the patient to look after themselves, Nick?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that that's a really fair comment, isn't it? We've all got a responsibility for our own health as well. But I think where the pharmacist can come in, or other healthcare professionals can come in, is there's so much information and misinformation, as we've been discussing through this hour, Andy, that actually to have somebody that's trusted, that you have a trusted relationship, that continuity of relationship with a clinician, whoever that clinician is, means that you can then have the best advice to embrace you, to help yourself, right? So, you know, if you need some help in deciding what's good and how that works, or is that a thing, is that not a thing, then that constant relationship is just something that can really, really help. So completely agree and take that point on. But obviously sometimes people need some advice and guidance.
Okay, well, and Shirley's final point is just one word and a question mark. Internet.
Yeah, great.
How do you counteract Dr. Google.
I love Dr. Google. It's great. You know, I mean, you know, and it's amazing how many people in consultation say to me, you know, I've Dr. Googled this, and therefore, and what you have to do is, you know, we all want information. And there was a thing when it first came out, the internet, wasn't it, that, you know, everyone was going to be obsolete and actually we're not going to be needed and da, 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 da. But actually being able to have somebody trusted to go through that, to say, actually, the evidence behind this is this, the evidence behind that is that, actually it helps you make those sorts of decisions, doesn't it? And I think the internet can be a great tool for finding out some stuff that's out there, but always then take that with a pinch of salt and get that rationally thought through.
Okay, this is a question now from Barry, and he talks about, you mentioned earlier on about Big Pharma making money, mm-hmm. and obviously pharmacists, you've got to make a living out of all
we
this.
Do.
So how do you kind of, the market pressures, business model evaluation, yeah. How do pharmacists pitch where their business is going to be?
Yeah, so I think that's an individual commercial choice, right? So, I mean, the way in which we run our business is, you know, if there's a Manx Care NHS service that's available, then we offer that first because we think that's the right and appropriate thing to do, having got a full Manx Care license. After that, then you just have a really open and transparent conversation with people. You know, if you need this as a private consultation, it will cost you X, a prescription will cost you Y. And as long as people are well informed, then they go with where they, you know, whether or not it's the bit I find difficult is if people are then expected to pay something they're not expecting. I think if you go in with your eyes open, that's right. And from a commercial point of view, we just try and keep our prices competitive and make sure that, for example, you know, people are maybe paying internet prices but getting great clinical care. And I think that's an individual commercial decision for each business.
Okay, 653 in the message in just saying, what's Nick's view of the use of statins?
Statins. Okay, yeah, no. So statins were fascinating. So if you look at some of the original clinical trial stuff for that, which was in Scotland with simvastatin first, you know, it's one of the only medical trials that was, you know, maybe to one of our previous callers' dismay, was actually stopped early because the benefits were so great that they felt they couldn't continue because actually they needed to get out to market, and that's where it was passed and where it was done. I think statins, what I see when I've prescribed them, because I've worked both in general practice setting and when I've dispensed them in a community pharmacy setting, people either tolerate them and get on them really with them really well and go, yeah, I don't really feel like I'm taking anything, the data about them is really, really good. Or if they're going to struggle, they really struggle with things like nerve pain, joint pain, and that's when you get into then some individual quite, you know, specific ways in which you can prescribe medicine, either low doses or every other days, that's, you know, you need to take that clinical advice. So overall, definitely health benefit. In sort of pragmatic point of view, people either get on with them really well, don't know they're on them, or they do need a little bit of care and help with them.
Now, the Manx Care run a thing called the Minor Ailment Scheme, which is where you can go to a community pharmacy and offer help in the Minor Ailment Scheme.
Yeah.
Just run through what the conditions are.
So the conditions are really varied and actually much more than most other sort of jurisdictions. We've looked at comparisons in other places. So bacterial conjunctivitis, you've got inflammatory skin disorder, some impetigo, some cystitis, vaginal thrush, oral thrush, some shingles, some hay fever. We've also got, I think, cough, exercise-related injury, potentially gout, constipation, nappy rash, and I think some simple toothache as well. So, you know, there's a myriad of things there that you can get additional advice and potentially treatment for across the 27 sites on the Isle of Man.
A question for Nick, please, as well. Is it advisable for a petite 47-kilogram person to take the weight loss jab?
I think that's a really interesting question. It would depend on your height. So what we would say is, you know, from a clinical point of view, if your BMI is above 30, I know BMI has its own challenges, or body mass index has its own challenges as a unit and a measurement. But, you know, if it's over 30, then you've got no other clinical reasons why not to take it, then you could start it. Between 27 and 30, with other clinical comorbidities or other reasons, then yes, if you're BMI is below 27, then no, you shouldn't start it. If you've already been on it and you're a petite person, then the way in which we always do it is a normal body mass index is between 18.5 and 25. And when your BMI gets down to around sort of 22, 23, then that's the time where you need to think about, is this right and safe for you to continue on? So it'll be very, very individual based, primarily on body mass.
Okay, I've heard that before, that BMI is not the be-all and end-all.
No, I mean, those of us that remember, I'm a bit older, like Pinson and Redgrave, the Olympic rowers, they were classed as morbidly obese on a BMI scale because it's height versus weight. But again, when we're talking about medicines and when we're prescribing, it's about keeping people safe, and that's the way in which the definition is done through the data sheet and the trial. So that, although it's imperfect, is the measurement we have to use.
Nick Kay is here. Nick, the pharmacist from Kingsley Mooty, is on Man in Line today. And if you've got any questions in general that you'd like to put to Nick, by all means do get in touch. We've got a load of messages to get through. If you want to call 66 13 68, by all means do. Nick Kay, a past chairman of the National Pharmacy Association, will be with us until one today.
Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450 500. That's 450 500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Your next adventure is closer than you think. The Loganair sale is now on. Save 17% on flights when booking online with promo code TARTAN17. Book by midnight September 9th. Find deals at loganair.co.uk. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Subject to availability.
Relaxation takes time. That's why downstairs at Millichap's new stressless showroom, we encourage you to wander in, have a seat and lean back. Take time and find out which of Stressless's incredible range of different sized recliner chairs is right for you. Some have matching sofas too. Lean back on a Stressless. Relax your body and free your mind. Then you'll understand the Stressless Eureka moment. Experience the amazing new Stressless showroom downstairs at Millichaps of Ramsey.
The Manx Gaelic. Chinian Amera. The mother tongue of Elian Vanin, the Isle of Man. You can catch up with more of Manx Radio's Manx language programmes in the weekly podcast Abershen Rish. Say that again.
Abershen Rish.
Shene, that's the one.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Here's a message for Nick. 700 says, why can't prescription drugs be reused if the blister pack is intact?
Yeah, no, it's a really great question, and it pains us with all the stuff that comes back in. It's all to do with the stability and where it's stored. So if you take the medicine out of the pharmacy, you stick it in your cabinet in the bathroom, the temperature goes up above 25 degrees, you bring it back to me, I give it back out to you, Andy, and it goes off too quick. It's basic stability and tamper, which is exceptionally frustrating, but that's the official reason why.
Okay, community pharmacy, this is 53S, says community pharmacy sounds like a great idea. The downside is that apart from a couple of independent pharmacies in Douglas, you're seeing multiples. So you're seeing, you know, people like Boots and the other chain and what have you, says Andrea.
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's something about community pharmacies actually, all have them within them, great teams, great people, the same qualified clinicians, and irrelevant to the name above the door at the front, you know, you will get personalised and people that want to care and want to help. Different people have different business models, and that's great. But, you know, I think it's about the professional and the services behind that.
OK, Keith, you're live with Nick the pharmacist. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Andy. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Keith.
I have a question, and that is, it now takes a week for our prescriptions to get filled by our local pharmacist. Now, is this due to Manx Care insisting on the pharmacies going to the cheapest supplier? And if that is the case, are the cheaper drugs adequate to do the job that they're being prescribed for?
So, Keith, I think you've got two questions there, I think, really. The first would be around the time with which it takes to get your prescription filled. So, obviously, it does take time. It takes time for the GP practice to review your prescription and then to sign it off if it's clinically appropriate. And also the physical transit of the prescription from the GP practice to the pharmacy. When electronic prescribing comes into the island, although it will have probably some operational and teething issues, you know, you'll be able to the GPs, as soon as they press the button in the surgery, the prescription should appear in the pharmacy relatively quickly, and also allow us to track it, so prescriptions shouldn't get lost anymore. And I think then the other question, which is around potentially generic medicines, you know, generic medicines are all licensed and made to a standard. If they can't get to that standard, then they can't get licensed. So the medicines that are supplied will be safe and appropriate. I think the time frame will be more about the physical way in which stock arrives to the island, and also the processing of the prescription between pharmacy and GP practice.
Frustrating though, isn't it?
It is frustrating, you know, but I think things like electronic prescribing certainly can speed it up. And again, most people, you know, don't mind if they know that what the time frame is, you know. So, you know, what I tend to find with people, that they're people that come into the pharmacy, is it ready yet? No, it's not. But, you know, the use of technology, text messaging when things are available, or, you know, the ability to say, if you call in and go, it's not ready yet, but if when electronic prescribing's here, you'll be able to track it and you'll be able to say, well, actually, it's sat with a GP, or it's sat in the pharmacy, or we don't have it in stock, or they've sent it to a different pharmacy. All of that kind of stuff goes away. The knowledge is key to try and make that painful journey a little bit smoother, Andy.
How is this affecting you, Keith?
Well, it's just frustrating. You know, I had a prescription I put in the other day. It happened to be over the bank holiday. So when I went in after the bank holiday to collect it, I was told, oh, we can't get that one. And we can't, you know, suggest an alternative. You'll have to go back to the doctor to get an alternative.
I mean, I think in that sort of situation, you know, I think, you know, depending on the individual prescription, the individual item, sometimes alternatives are helpful to be given. But again, pharmacists don't necessarily always have the full clinical picture to give that advice. But I agree, it definitely can be frustrating.
Okay, thanks for raising that, Keith. Good to hear from you.
Okay, Andy. Cheers.
So when we hear sometimes you go into a pharmacist and they'll say there's a shortage of this.
Yeah.
Is that a shortage on the Isle of Man, or is it in the supply from the UK, or where is it?
So do you know what? I've been really impressed actually about the supply of medicine to the Isle of Man generally. You know, we have three mainline wholesalers that deliver, you know, daily, slightly more challenging with boats and other things like that and bad sailing. But primarily the shortage will be because of a UK-wide national shortage as opposed to an Isle of Man specific shortage. You know, and do you know what? The way in which the Isle of Man contractors work together, actually, there's things that we have as contractors, which are, you know, WhatsApp groups. Has anyone got any stock of this? Does anyone got any stock of that? So, you know, there is a really sort of cooperative sort of mindset and ethos across the pharmacy contractors on the Isle of Man, which I haven't seen in other places.
Was there any possibility you would do anything other than be a pharmacist?
So my mum was a primary school teacher, and I was thinking about doing that at one point. But, you know, with five kids, I think I've got my hands full on both sides, Andy.
Okay. And the final message in from Ollie, just a question, just to say, are you going to do a YouTube about your pharmacy robot?
Do you know what? We actually are going to do some social media stuff on it. Yeah, and we were thinking about getting it named by a local school, so watch this space.
Okay, thanks for being with us. We'll see you before Christmas.
That'd be great, Andy. Love to come back.
Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
Nick Kay from Kingsley Mooty and our pharmacist. If you want to follow up on anything that Nick's had to say, by all means, drop me a note. Email maninline@manxradio.com. And remember, as Nick said, your pharmacist is there to help you. Make sure you use your pharmacist, community pharmacies, right around the Isle of Man. That's it. Back with another open line tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks to Howie on the phones. Hope the weather gets better. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
WINT